What was that moment for you, you think, in your first year that kind of like, okay, I can do this now?
That for we were playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think it was a Monday Night Football game. And had this linebacker named LaVon Kirkland, who was a baller. A big boy, too. Probably the biggest linebacker who's ever lived.
Yeah.
They threw me a ball right down the middle.
Yeah.
And I just went up over his head and caught it like a rebound over his head.
Yeah.
And came down with it. And that was the first time I was like, man, I got this.
You can do this.
I can do this. But it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows after that. But that was the first time I knew I could play in the NFL and be well.
Every Hall of Famer has experienced it. Every MVP has gone through it. Every All-Star has endured it. It is a unifying experience amongst all professional athletes, the perennial superstars, and the ones who couldn't quite grasp it. For some, it is a memory they hold dear and remember with great nostalgia. For others, it was a horror show they would love to forget. But for every single professional athlete, it's the one thing they all have in common. Rookie Year.
Welcome to Rookie Year. Today's guest, one of the all-time NFL greats, Tony Gonzalez. Born and raised in Southern California, Tony grew up playing both basketball and football before being drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs in the first round in 1997. Where he played 12 seasons, followed by a five-year stint with Atlanta Falcons. During his 17 years as a pro, he was selected to 14 Pro Bowls, holds numerous NFL records, including being the number one total receiving yards by a tight end, number three all-time in receptions. Here to tell us about his journey, success, and hardships, the great Tony Gonzalez. Welcome to Rookie Year, Tony.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And the whole purpose of this show is to talk about the experiences, most part, of your rookie year, because so many athletes... people go through it, and I think it's one of the most impactful years of your career.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, you kind of came with a unique situation. You had a basketball background, you know, really good football player. When you hear your name called, because your team traded up to be able to acquire you, so you knew that they wanted you, you hear your name called for the draft. What is that like?
It's like a culmination of all this hard work that you've been putting in since Pop Warner.
Yeah.
You know, let alone high school and then obviously college. It's like it's all happening. And for me, we were out in New York. We were at the draft. And it wasn't as big as it was now. Like now it's a spectacle. You got all the cameras and that people, celebrities and people coming back and making the picks that used to play for the team. It was big, but it wasn't like that. But I remember I was sitting at my hotel room and I was supposed to go late first round.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they projected me to do. And all of a sudden, I get a call from my agent saying, "Hey, you got to get down here right now because there's three teams talking about trading up to get you." So the Cowboys were going to trade up to get me, and the 49ers were thinking about trading up to get me. And I knew Kansas City wanted me, and so he's like, "Get your ass down here right now." And I flew down there, and I remember I didn't know how to tie a tie either. my agent had to tie a tie for me when I got there, and I came running in late. And sure enough, I literally got there and was drafted within the first, I think, almost 10 minutes. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been there.
That's amazing.
But I didn't know because they traded up to the 13th spot. And I thought I was going to go 20-something. And so that's a difference of an hour right there almost.
For sure.
And so anyways, once I heard it was Kansas City, it was like, oh, okay, so that's it. Your heart, you get excited, mm-hmm. but also then a little bit of fear comes over you. At least for me, it did. Where it's like, damn, I mean, life's about to change.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm California kid. It's gone now. I'm going to Kansas City, in the middle of America. I'm young, and I'm a California kid,
too. Yeah, exactly. That's true. That's true.
I mean,
you're thinking like, all right, Dallas, I can see that. You know, like the Cowboys do that. Kansas City, it's a tough transition to go. I mean, especially in the wintertime there.
Yeah, wintertime.
Like, okay, that's nothing else. When you got to Kansas City and you got like that first Kansas City winter, straight line winds, it's cold and... I mean, was that an experience for you?
Oh, it sucked. I'm not used to it. I can't stand cold weather. I don't like it. I don't ever want to live where it's cold, but I had to because it was Kansas City. But you get used to it, obviously. But it's one of those things, though. You never get used to it. People are like, oh, you get used to to living in cold weather. For me, it never happened for me. But you get used to playing in it, but you don't get used to living in it.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Indiana, so I was pretty accustomed to it. But then I've been lucky enough to live in Florida, live out here now. I lived in New York for a long time, but I have to have a break. Like the people that just live in cold weather year round.
I don't understand it.
I don't either. like I have to have a break. Even when I was living in New York, because of the NBA, we travel 4 days a week. You were always in Florida, Texas, California. So you got a break from the New York winters. football is such a tough thing because you actually live in that city.
Yeah.
Like, where you guys travel for one day, pretty much?
It was one day. Yeah, like, 8 times a year, that's it. Just 8 nights a year you're gone. Otherwise, you're home.
Yeah, you're in Kansas City. And then the summertime, you have optional, not optional workouts.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's that though.
Yeah, and I was, you know, once I had a baby, my third year, I was hardly ever in Kansas City, only during the season. Yeah. Nothing against Kansas City. I enjoyed Kansas City, it was just different.
It's a culture shock.
People have preferences, and it was just different, especially back then.
Well, like for me now, even, my parents are always like, could you move back home? And I'm from Bloomington, Indiana. So, I could never go back to living on a farm. Like, it sounds good, but I worked my whole life to get off of that farm. Because it sounds good until you're cutting wood in the wintertime. It's 4 degrees outside.
Yeah.
You're messing around with pigs, chickens, dogs everywhere. It's a hard life.
Yeah. You don't know the rules either. Because in cold weather, when I remember the first time it was freezing, and I came outside to my car, and I couldn't see out the window because it had ice on it. And so I didn't have an ice scraper. And so I'm trying to use my hands. My hands started freezing. And I got to be at practice. So I just said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be smart about this. And I'm going to go inside and I'm going to get a glass of warm water. And I'm going to throw that on the windshield. And everybody who out there who's in cold weather knows that you don't do that. That's not smart. No, the window cracks.
That's not going to work. Yeah. That's not going to work at all.
Yeah. So I had to learn the hard way. But, you know, it is what it is.
So with the expectations, too, because Kansas City is a football town. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Chiefs draw so much. Was there nerves coming into that? Because, I mean, that team wasn't in a rebuild. That team wanted to win now. Did you have nerves of, was there added pressure of that kind of environment?
Yeah, yeah. And I was scared. I mean, if I could do it all over, I don't know if I'd want to do it all over, but if I knew then what I know now, I would have said, okay, let's just be fearless about this. Don't go in there thinking that you don't belong. Yeah. I still had that attitude that I didn't belong there. And I wish I would have felt better about it. And I played okay my rookie year, but I didn't start. And I remember when I sat down the very first meeting, this is, like you said, this wasn't a rebuilding team. They were loaded with stars. And starting off with Marty Schottenheimer, like legendary coach. And I remember Marcus Allen was on my team.
Yeah.
And Derek Thomas and Andre Bad Moon Rising, like all these people that I had heard about and watched.
Yeah.
And I'm like staring at them out the side, like I'm looking at them instead of looking at the coach because I'm like fanboy now. I'm like, holy shit, there's Marcus Allen right there.
And they're men. Same thing for me. I walk in my locker room and Michael Jordan, Charles Oakley, Brian Russell, you know, Larry Hughes, Tyronn Lue, Patrick Ewing is one of our coaches, and I'm 20 years old, and I'm sitting there like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Until they were mean to me, and they're like, "Hey, Rook, go over there and do this." Yeah. They do, and then I was like, "These guys aren't very nice." And I quit the guys I thought they were going to be. But yeah, when you play with men, it is intimidating. It is scary.
Yeah, it's scary because especially you go. There's no preparing you for that. The strength of grown men now versus college guys.
Yeah.
And the mentality, the killer instinct that everybody has who stays on the team. It's sink or swim, and you have to step your game up. And so it's challenging. It's not going to be easy, but it's one of those things. It shouldn't be easy.
Yeah.
If you're expecting it to be easy, then you're kind of kidding yourself. It's going to be tough. You're going to have to work your ass off. You're going to have to dig deep. You're going to have to find new areas that you've never explored before in yourself.
Yeah.
You have to uncharted territory. But it's a process. And most people, there's that rare guy. And I feel sorry for the guy who comes in just dominating right away. Mm-hmm. I always feel like something bad is going to happen sooner or later.
Yeah, it does.
So I'd rather get it over, get that learning curve, those growing pains out of the way. And I went through growing. It didn't, you know, that was that year. I remember the first time I went across the middle I held out of camp. Because I wanted to, you know, we were doing the contract. And so we couldn't come. I was 9 days late to camp. So by the time I showed up too, there was no integration for me. Like the first 2-3 days of practice were in shorts and t-shirts. They was
full
pads.
Yeah.
And I remember I signed my contract and I came out. As soon as I signed my contract, I got my deal done and I walk out and practice had already begun and they were practicing against the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah.
So I was like, they're not going to want me to practice. So I sign it. I'm shaking everybody's hand and I see head coach Marty and he shakes my hand and he looks at me. He's like, go get dressed. And I'm like, what? And I got dressed, came out in full pads, first day I've ever had with a professional team, was in full pads against a different team that hates me. That's not, I was really not going to take it easy on me.
Yeah.
And I remember I got my ass kicked that practice by the other team.
And isn't it so funny, I argue all the time across all sports, the way that young players now are coddled and taken into a system. And, you know, if you're, you have knee pain, you know, they'll hold you out. If you have this, we didn't have that either.
No.
We're doing 2-a-days for a whole month. And if you were sore as a rookie, you couldn't get on the training table until all the veteran guys were done.
Yeah.
Now, if a kid comes in and they're like, well, he has problems with his feet, they'll hold you out for your whole rookie year, maybe even 2 years, to try to get you right. I'm like, but if you're not right at 20 years old, yeah, it's never going to get right.
Something's wrong. It's
only going to go downhill. And I see the same thing in football. They try so hard to make every draft pick succeed. They give them, like, your first quarterback taken, and they put you on the bench for 2 years to let you work your way into it. It's like, by the time you play, you're 25 years old.
Yeah, yeah, and you're stunting people's growth.
You are, man.
I think that's what it goes back to, that whole, you know, the pain. The pain's going to come no matter what.
No matter what you do.
And so I think you rob yourself. A lot of this millennial mentality and this young athlete mentality, they come in thinking that they're supposed to be great day one.
Yeah.
And you hear the old schoolers, Michael Jordan's probably the biggest voice out there for basketball, where they come in and go, well, back in my day, you had to earn it. You have to earn these contracts.
If you don't put people in the stands for me, if people don't come just to buy a ticket to come you, that's the one thing to be a max player. You got to sell jerseys. You got to sell seats. Secondly, I got to be able to depend on you to carry my franchise. I can't pay you $35 million a year. I don't care who you are. $35 million a year to the public is such a huge number, they're going to end up resenting you in some kind of way. Like, if you're not carrying teams, when the average guy working at FedEx sees that number and sees you averaging even 20 points and your team's mid-tier in a conference across all sports, you're hated. Look at baseball. Baseball contracts got so big and they put so much pressure on these guys. No one's worth $30 million a year. Nobody. Mm-hmm. Maybe LeBron.
Uh-huh.
But, like, it puts fans in a position where they hate players.
Yeah.
And it does drive clicks because people want to say he's not worth it, but nobody is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you hate to say it, some of the veteran guys that are sitting there making this amount of money, they're sitting back like, man, I'm paying you all this. Like, you're taking this much of the cap from us. Like, it creates a level of resentment. And it puts pressure on you as a player. I remember when I signed my big deal, I was terrible for the first 2 years because the pressure of making $7 million.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was a lot of money. I wasn't worth that much, but they gave it to me. That was a lot of pressure, man.
Yeah. Like, yeah. But you know what it is, though? I think pressure is wonderful, or fear is what I call it.
Yeah.
Because as pressure can do, it can make you really, really great. It makes diamonds. You've heard that.
Yep.
And but it could also bust you. It can pressure bust pipes.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do get busted by that.
Yeah.
And so if you're a young person, I have four kids. If I'm talking to them, I'm telling them, look, just know that it's coming. It is coming. The critics are coming.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure is going to be there for you. It's up to you to get through it. But you must stay there and you must focus. And you can't turn to the you can't listen to that noise and then start drinking and start partying, because that's what I did too.
Yeah.
And by the way, I went through that.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I went through that. But you have to learn from that. You have to be curious. You have to be forever, ever curious if you're ever going to be great at anything.
Well, I say this all the time. So many times people want to be famous. You got to be prepared to be famous. Because like you said, with fame comes hatred. Most people that are extremely famous, most of the people that know them and their fans, probably 50-50, it's because they hate them. You know, you look at LeBron James, maybe the greatest player of all time, he's hated by most people just because of they want something to dislike a guy about.
Yeah.
And I have a 10-year-old daughter, and she knows every YouTube kid. Most of those YouTube kids fizzle out because your life is consumed by being famous for essentially lack of talent. So now that next person's right behind you, and you have to push the envelope more and more and more. Mm-hmm. So it does, man. Fame is a difficult thing.
And this is where I do find that, and this is what I talk, the last speech I ever had to my teammates. Yeah. Year 17, I'm retiring. Everybody knows this is my last game. I'm playing against Carolina Panthers, Cam Newton's team.
Yeah.
And I got up in front of the team, and I told them, a lot of you guys have watched me all year. And I prepared after year three, when I figured this out, after year two, going into year three, I figured out what works for me. And that was going out before practice, catching balls.
Mm-hmm.
That was when practice was going, while the defense was going, the offense takes a rest. I said, I'm not going to take a rest. I'm going to catch balls.
Mm-hmm.
After practice is over, I'm going to catch balls with my chin strap on, my full pads on, and in the moment, eyes wide open, focused, intense balls.
Yeah.
And so you guys have watched me all year, and none of you guys have done it. Maybe one or two people in this room have done it. Julio Jones was one of them who decided to do it. I was there when he was a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, you can't put that together. And I don't know why.
Yeah.
And I go, it's a routine. It's a routine of greatness. And a lot of you guys don't love football. That's the reason why you won't do it.
Yeah.
I love catching footballs.
Yeah.
I don't love blocking people. I don't love going out there and getting my ass kicked. I don't love being up here all day, just like the rest of you. I'll bitch with the best of them.
Yeah.
But one thing I do love is catching footballs and running routes. I enjoyed that. And so that's what got me out of bed. That's what got me going. That's what I would dream about before I went to sleep. And when I'd wake up in the morning, I would think about catching balls. And these young people, that's what I tell them, like, find something to love about what you do. And if you can't, then maybe it's you should have the guts to go try something else then. But I get it for professional athletes. They're like, man, I'm 6'8" or whatever. I should play basketball. Or, I had guys on my team, 320 pounds athletic. But you don't love football.
Yeah.
And so you'll never, ever know how good you can be. Yeah. You will never, ever know.
I cannot agree more. I think, and that's what defines someone that had a career, someone to yourself. You were able to find that and focus on, and you essentially become the greatest tight end ever and a Hall of Fame player. But there are so many guys that have talent, and that talent doesn't mean anything. I mean, mm-hmm. I played with guys that were so talented, and you knew that their career was going to be very short. One of my teammates, really, really good player, Steve Francis,
mm-hmm.
played 9 years in the NBA.
Yeah.
And you would think that when we were coming up, Steve Franchise, he was like, that's awesome. But it's one of those things, you do ascend like that, and if you don't have the work ethic and the focus to sustain a level of play, that next you is right behind you. You know, that next good player right behind you.
Yeah, but that's what I say. It's for me, the way I explain that is that you don't love it then.
Yeah.
Because I would never, ever let myself slip because I love it so much.
Yeah.
That's gonna make me stay after practice. That's gonna make me show up early. It's I can't accept anything less than like the need for discipline disappears when you love what you do.
Correct.
And a lot of guys they love money. It's like, okay, they do it for the contract. I want to be rich. And then when they get that contract, then their game slips. And that's why, because they don't love. They want to be rich, or they love being famous.
Yeah.
Oh, I love what football gives me.
Yeah.
I don't love the game. I love what basketball gives me.
Yeah.
And those are the guys that you know them too. They're like these guys that play well in their contract year.
Always.
I'm like, bullshit. If I was the owner, and I played with guys on my team, don't pay that guy that money. Don't pay him. And then they pay him the money, and sure enough, his game slides because he did well because he wants the money and he wants the prestige, you know.
Well, and money also, I say this, money's an enhancer of the person you already are.
Mm-hmm.
If this dude has character flaws that make him a bad person, and he can cover those up for a year, maybe two, but as soon as he gets that money, the bad in him is going to come out.
Yeah.
If you have a good person and they've been inherently good for most of their life and you give them money, they'll be a better person.
Yeah.
So you have to look at the underlying tones. Like, one of the things that we never touched when I was in the front office, if you had DUIs or domestic violence, those were like non-starters for us, because that's an underlying, especially once Uber took off, that was an underlying thing that you're making. So in free agency, you have a player that's making, a million plus dollars that decides to get behind the wheel of a car. When I said, no, like, that has to be something. I think that Josh Kroenke, who owns the Rams, Mr. Kroenke also, and Tim Connelly, that was one of the things that we all decided that we weren't going to do. And I think the same thing you said, owners have to like dig their feet in at some point. They just quit paying guys for the sake of paying them. If they're just not the person you want, don't pay them.
Yeah. Yeah, but I've heard stories about Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I've met him one time. But I've heard that he's somewhat not a very likable guy because he's full of this anger and all this stuff. But he loved basketball.
Yes.
And that was first. It doesn't mean that you can't have, you know, your suits and your style and go out there in the fancy cars, buy your Ferraris, go date women if you're whatever single, if you're I don't care.
Yeah.
But you better keep, and this is the final thing I told to the guys on my team, bringing it back to that, is that if you keep football up here at the top before everything else,
mm-hmm.
and that's the harsh reality of it. whether you like it or not. I'm talking before anything, before your religion, before your family, before anything. It doesn't mean that other stuff isn't important.
Yeah.
Because if you take care of that sport or your what you do for a living, now you can take care of your family. Now you can take care of God or whatever.
The church. I mean,
now you can go get the girls. You can go to the front of the line at the club.
Yeah.
Just keep football at the top and everything else will take care of itself from there. And that is how, and I don't, that, and you don't have to be a nice person either.
No.
You can be somebody that nobody likes on your team, but shit, when the game starts, that sucker is here to show up and he's going to give us 25 points and 10 rebounds and 10 assists, whatever it is, and we're going to win the game.
Yeah.
That's who I always wanted out of my teammates. I didn't have to like you, but I wanted you to love football. I needed you to put football first. And the reality is, most people don't do that at their own jobs. It's just, I don't know what it is. I don't know how to put my finger on it, but I'd say 30% of the league maybe loves football. Mm-hmm. The other 70, maybe even more than that, 80% are just doing it for other reasons, but not because of the love of the game.
So we'll go back real quick. Who was the defining veteran for, you know, your first year? Like, who was that person? Like, you said you walked in there, mm-hmm. you're like, all right, cool. I'm going to go hang out with this guy. He finally got it figured out.
You know, and I made the choice at the beginning, it was Andre Rison.
Okay.
And that was a bad choice.
Yeah.
I got nothing. I love Andre. I ever see him, give him hugs. But, you know, at that point in his career, it's Andre Bad Moon Rison for a reason.
Yeah.
And then once I saw, okay, well, that's probably not going to work for me.
Yeah.
There was a guy named Ted Popson. You probably don't know who he is. He was a tight end. He actually started that year over me. He was somebody who was a good veteran, like the whole keep your mouth, you know, just don't tread softly, like you said.
Yeah.
This is how you do it.
Yeah.
This is how to be a professional.
Yeah.
And then after that, then you can start reading books. I always tell athletes, man, just read a book on Michael Jordan. That was how to be like Mike.
Yeah.
How to be like Michael Jordan is a great book. I forgot the GM from the Orlando Magic back in the day. He's got like 19 kids, adopted him. He drafted Howard.
Yeah.
I forgot the name of him, but he was the GM there for a while.
Yeah.
But he's written a bunch of books, How to Be Like, and he wrote How to Be Like Michael Jordan. It's a great book. Every professional athlete should read this book.
One of the greatest books I've ever read was Coach Walsh's book, his coaching book. The 49ers, his blueprint of what he went through and how he did it. Like, the original copies go for like $300 or $400 now because they don't do reprints of them, so they're hard to get a hold of.
Uh-huh.
But the book itself, just his mentality and mindset, I think it's something important for every leader. So, you know, guys that I worked for in the past or work with that were in leadership management roles, I would try to get them a copy of that book, because also one of the hardest things to do, and, you know, you naturally progressed into it later on in your career, is to be a leader. Like, either you lead by example or there are vocal leaders, or there's a combination of both sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to really work at that. 'Cause like you said, it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to stand up there and, you know, be the hardest worker, because there are guys that don't want to work hard sometimes, and they look at you like, man, you sell out, man. Like, we don't want to be first and run and do that, and you just keep your head down and go.
Yeah.
Then there are those guys that are like the rah-rah hype guys, but then they might be rah-rah and have a bad game, and now they got to keep that energy up even after a bad game. So you're right. Reading is one of the things I tell a lot of people, and go to the example of what these people have learned even through time. I mean, there's so many great books. It's a good call.
And it's easy, though. You're talking about taking somebody's expertise who it took a lifetime to accumulate.
Yeah.
And you get to absorb all that information in 5 hours.
Yeah.
If you're serious about being successful, you are cracking a book.
Yeah.
Often.
Yeah.
If you're serious about it.
Yeah, you are. I mean, even, you know, game tape, listening to other veterans around you and talking about that stuff, man, it really is. It's a very unique skill set to be humble enough to realize that you're not the smartest person, to realize that there are people that are smarter than you that came before you, and listen to what they said.
Yeah,
it is. It's a skill set. So why football, not basketball?
Well, I mean, I played power forward and I couldn't dribble that well, you know, for pro standards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I always felt I could have made it in the NBA. People ask, and I know I could have.
Yeah.
But because I'd play in the summer pro league, and I'd play at Long Beach at the Pyramid, and I'd play in the Real Run and all that stuff.
Yep.
And I'd get my game. I'd average over 20 points in those leagues, but it was just, I'm a 6'5 tight end.
Yeah.
Which, athletic, especially at that point, that wasn't brought to that position. Or I can be a guy who maybe will get drafted. The best I'd ever be was probably, you know, eighth man on the bench, something like that. It was honestly an easy choice.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it makes it a whole lot easier, especially like you said, if you have a clear trajectory where you can be great at it. When you talked about it earlier, what was that moment for you when you were like, all right, I can do this? For me, I was playing against the Celtics and Paul Pierce was Paul Pierce, and it was like late in the game and I was guarding him 1-on-1 and like got to stop in the game. We ended up winning the game. And that's when that moment when I lost a lot of my fear as a player. Because, you know, being on an island against this guy that is so talented, you know, coming into the prime of his career, I was like, okay, I can do this. You know, at least I know that defensively I fit, you know, this box. What was that moment for you, you think, in your first year that kind of like, okay, I can do this now?
That we were playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think it was a Monday Night Football game, and had this linebacker named LaVon Kirkland, who was a baller, a big boy too. probably the biggest linebacker who's ever lived.
Yeah.
A 265-pound middle linebacker. Anyway, they threw me a ball right down the middle.
Yeah.
And I just went up over his head and caught it like a rebound over his head.
Yeah.
And came down with it. And that was the first time I was like, man, I got this.
You can do
this. I can do this. But it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows after that. But that was the first time I knew I could play in the NFL and be well.
Yeah. Mm. You talked about it. And I never played football for this reason because I was scared to death of it. How much does it hurt to really get hit? Like, honestly, because, like, I wore a football helmet a couple times. People just go hit me on my head, and I'd be like, get this thing off of me. Uh-huh. So, I mean.
Yeah, it's not even close. You know, obviously, a guy who's played football and basketball.
Yeah.
And I played basketball at the highest level. Like, I went out to the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you knew that, but I tried out for the Miami Heat with Pat Riley, and Stan Van Gundy was our coach. Spoelstra was there, all that whole.
Yeah.
Bob McAdoo. And I've played against it, and it's no comparison, the amount of physicality.
Nothing, right?
Compared to basketball. That's why Charles Barkley's like, hell no, I ain't playing football because it's too hard. It hurts bad. It's one of those things, it takes time to get used to those hits. Your body has to adjust.
Really?
Even physically, I think it's just like, you know, like you watch the martial arts movies and they're kicking trees to make their bones stronger and their muscles stronger.
It's football.
Yeah, it took a while for me to get used to the hits. Because I remember after playing, I'd get out of a game and I'd be like, man, I can't move for like 2 days. But then as I got in my career going, I was catching the ball more and being more involved and was able to walk away from the game that night. And the next morning, I actually feel okay. I think my body just got used to the pains and was able to bounce back a lot quicker.
And it is funny because, like in football, you get hit every single play. If in basketball, you get hit like in the forehead, I mean, you just like, I'm going down. Oh. It's over. You look at see if you're bleeding or not. Like,
You talk about Paul Pierce now. Paul Pierce is the all-time example of, okay, that's a basketball player. when he went down and got wheelchaired off. And I remember what, and then came back and played. I was like, oh my God, that is basketball.
That's my boy. We were talking about it the other day. Like, you watch football. I mean, if I got hit that hard, seriously, I'd be out for 6 months. I'd be in the hospital bed. Like, you okay? I'm like, just pull the plug.
I'm not ready.
I'm not going to get up for about. Because, I mean, he took a helmet right on the chin and almost went down.
But that's how it is. That's old school. And obviously you get a flag and you might get kicked out of the game. Back when I came in, that's what they wanted to do. That was the goal of Rodney Harrison or Steve Atwater or John Lynch. When we went over the middle, it was like, okay, they're coming to rip you, to knock your helmet off.
Yeah.
They're trying to knock you out. They want to keep you, they want you unconscious so you can't come back and play. Now the game has changed. Thank God it's different now. That's why these numbers are outrageous now. That's why you have a Patrick Mahomes. I guarantee those guys, Lamar Jackson, they're not taking off running.
But see, that's too, the skewness of sports now. Everything, you have to put up points. Like, I looked at it, the year that the Pistons, it was the 89 year that they won a championship. I think they shot 6 threes a game.
Mm-hmm.
And now you got teams shooting 40 threes a game like it's nothing. You got quarterbacks throwing for, you know, 45, 50 touchdowns a season. You look at quarterbacks like a Montana, like an Elway, Dan Marino, that were throwing 25 times a game, getting like 20 completions, throwing for like 260-something yards. Do you think those quarterbacks translate better from the you know, the 80s, 90s era, or these quarterbacks now? You think just the numbers are just so inflated now because they pass the ball 50 times a game?
They pass the ball 50 times. We were Troy Aikman. It's a good example. He only threw the ball 25 times a game, like you said.
Yeah.
If he had, if he was throwing it 40, 45 times, what would the record book look like?
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different game, though. But here's the thing, too. I mean, I don't ever want to be that old guy saying, oh, well, you guys are soft. These kids. And you see Charles talk about it. Like I say, you see Michael Jordan. They all talk about it. And it is. It's just a different game.
It is.
That's all it is. They're making it safer. You have to evolve because – first of all, lawsuits. A lot of guys in the NFL, especially, you know, they didn't have concussions back when I was. Well, they
you,
had them.
But did you ever get a concussion when you were playing?
Yeah, of course. That's part of the game. It's like asking a boxer. You ever? It was called getting your bell rung.
Yeah,
that was it. And you come off, and you're like, man, I'm seeing three people, and they're like, are you okay? And then I think I'm okay, and they're like, all right, get your ass back in there and go catch some balls, so we can win this game and go home. And you did that.
Yeah.
But you know, that's not good though.
No, it isn't. And we've looked at the numbers for NBA. Guys' careers are longer, but they're playing the same number of games and minutes as the guys that played, which is the testament of the human body can only handle so much. So you can talk about, you know, not hitting as hard and not doing this. And the problem is your body can only withstand so much. So like you look at running backs, I don't care what it is. Once you get past 26 years old, you look at their numbers because your body can't, it's hard to hold up.
Yeah.
So all the modern medicine you want and do this, you might extend the years of their career, but I don't think you extend the minutes that much or the games.
It's just
because your body, it can only withstand so many miles. It's like you can have a brand new car, but if you drive that car 70,000 miles a year, it's going to break down.
Yeah.
But if you drive that car, you know, 1,000 miles a year, you might have it for 20 years, but it's the miles, but it is.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. I look at tight end now, my position where I never came off the field. Literally never came off the field. Short yardage, goal line, it didn't matter. I was on the field for the whatever, 75, 80 plays a game, where a lot of these guys are out there, they're playing, you know, specializing a little bit where they're going around 50 plays a game.
Yeah.
And it's a different foot.
Yeah, exactly. It's like specialized catching tight ends. Weren't, you know, getting their head knocked off.
Yeah.
Like having, because like double tight end sets and all that stuff, like that was a hard football game, man. Like you're blocking linemen and linebackers the whole time. It wasn't just bumping them and running down there catching the ball.
No. I would love to play in today's game.
It was just freedom to move. And
I couldn't imagine. I mean, we're going to throw the ball. That's all I wanted to do. I got mad when the running game was working because I knew we were going to run the ball all game. Like, man, it's going to be a long day.
It's going to be a long day. Right, well, so what was something? As soon as you get drafted, you were like, thank God, I'm going to go buy this.
A house. I mean, I think coming from where I came from, we didn't, I was welfare, single parent for a little while until we met my stepdad when I was about 12.
Mm-hmm.
So I always wanted a big house, and I got that in Kansas City for $270,000, too. That got me like a 4,500 square foot house.
You were like, come on, y'all, come live with me. I got this.
Yeah.
Did your family come live with you? Did they leave California?
No, my brother came and lived. One of my brothers came and lived with me. Thank God, helping me, because otherwise I did go crazy a little bit. And you deal with those distractions. We talked about them.
Well, listen, people are unrealistic if they think that. So I was 20 years old. The most money I probably ever had in my pocket was maybe $100. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because back then, even scholarships, we lived off campus. We didn't live on campus. So most of your scholarship money went towards rent, utilities. So you didn't have I think we got $750 a month or something like that, or $800 a month. So my rent was $400 or something. So utilities and food, I never had no money in my pocket. I got, my first advance check was $275,000. I went to the bank with the check. At the time, I just had an agent. I give him, so I want to cash this. And they go, sir, you can't cash that. I said, yes, I can. It's my money. So you give me my money right now. Yeah. They go, well, we can't get the money for you till tomorrow. I said, I'll be back. What time tomorrow? They said, come back here at 3 o'clock. Went back to the bank. And I'm thinking, $275. This is going back to movies. They're going to have a big duffel bag. I'm going to walk out. It was about a bag about this big. And I'm like, that's it? I go, can you put it in 20s? So it looks like more. So then they put it in 20s. It was a big bag of money. I'm like, perfect.
That's it.
I took it and I put it in my bed. And I just rolled around in it for like a day or two. And I put it back in the bag and took it back to the bank. But at least for that time, I mean, I was like, I made it, man. Like, this is really cool. And I don't think a lot of people know what it's like to
actually have parents that work really hard and actually come from absolutely nothing, and then all of a sudden you have something, because you do go crazy.
Yeah. Like, why like, wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
Look like, at the lottery winners.
Yeah, like you, and they always talk about athletes, just athletes. That I have a lot of friends that have made $50 to $100 million, very successful businessmen, that the market took a downturn, they made a risky investment, and they go broke. But they have the background that they get back into it and they build their money back up. So many people want to judge athletes for hitting hard times. Most of the country hits hard times. So why there's not, you know, there's no forgiveness a lot of times for athletes.
Yeah, because they think, okay, well, if that was me or if I was that, like, I would have been smarter. And it's like, man, you don't know what you would do.
You don't know.
Especially, I always say this too, like, especially when you're young, you have to be honest with what type of person you really, really are.
Yeah.
And so for me, I knew that I'm a California kid.
Yep.
Went to Berkeley, so Bay Area, then LA area. I like the nightlife.
Yeah.
I like to go out and have a drink. I liked back then. Yeah. I like to go to dinner. I like to go to clubs. I wanted to do that stuff. So I'm not gonna kid myself thinking that I'm gonna stay in and then there's guys that come in that are like or religious or have a girlfriend already, a wife or kids already. I was like, okay, I can't get into that life. I have to be honest with who I am, and so I got to do it the right way. A lot of guys, they try to kid themselves.
Yeah, and I'm the same way now. Like, people can say whatever. I'm consistent. I mean, I love dancing. I love going out. Love Jameson and Bud Light. Like, that's my wheelhouse. And like you said, I don't try to hide it. I don't lie to you about it. But I don't break the law. I don't hurt people. You went out and got drunk last night. Yes, I did. And I'll probably do it again tonight. But if you ask me, like, am I going to fight anybody? Am I going to steal from anybody and break the law? I don't do that.
As long as you're being responsible. And this goes back to I don't care. I mean, I would prefer my teammate to be a nice guy, to be somebody I want to hang out with and whatever. But really, when it comes down to it, we got to win games.
Yeah.
And that's what we get paid to do. And that's what the public expects from us, what our ownership, coaches, everybody expects that from us. So I don't really care what a guy does. Mm-hmm. As long as you can show up and give me your best effort. I need 100% out of you when you're at work. After that, I don't care what you do. You know?
Did you see this career that you've put together early on? Did you think like, hey, man, I'm going to walk away from this thing as the greatest tight end of all time? Or was it just a progression through your career and you were like, holy shit, I'm really good now? Like,
No. I never ever thought ahead like that. It was, shoot. I mean, even when I went to the pros, I remember my third year in college, they asked me after a game, hey, Tony, you thinking about leaving? And I was like, I didn't understand the question.
Yeah.
I was like, leaving? What do you mean? Like, no, I like Berkeley. I'm having a good time here and I'm looking forward. And they're like, they start laughing at me, all the reporters. They're like, no, going pro. And that was the first time it dawned on me that I'm going, I haven't even thought about it, but yeah. I don't know. And I remember, you know, and then my second year, I had a disastrous year where I led the league and dropped passes, got benched twice. And so then for sure, it was kind of a reboot. Okay, let's take this one game at a time.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's the New England Patriot way that it's literally one game. It's one play at a time. If I can be the best player I can right now for this one play, mm-hmm. I gotta get a plus on this. That's what I always kind of told myself. This one play, I need to win this down.
Yeah.
And if I do that every down, then all of a sudden the game's gonna, everything else will take care of itself. And then year after year, I would reevaluate and say, okay, I had a really good year. I was an all pro this year. I can get better. I know I can get better in this area, in this area, in this area, whatever. I would pick things. You have to play that game with yourself. Like I said, it goes back to that curiosity.
Yeah.
And when I say curiosity, that curiosity on how far you can take this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're looking, I wanted it to be perfect. That's what I wanted. And if you have that goal, it's a tough goal. It's not always fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if I'd recommend that because it was a lot of pressure I would put on myself. I would probably tell myself to relax a little bit more and just have a good time with it. And I did that more towards the end of my career.
Yeah.
But when you're in the mix, for me, it was never, I'm going to be a Hall of Fame football player. That's my goal. When guys say that, it turns me off.
Yeah.
Don't tell me you're going to be the best ever. And I see young guys, I want to be the best ever. Or I want to throw from, I'm like, shut up. Just do it. just do something this year. And that'll take care of itself. You're worried about the wrong thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's also too, when you start throwing out, I want to be the best ever. You know how much has to go right, even health-wise.
Yeah, health-wise.
I mean, I'm sure Derrick Rose at 22 years old was like, I got a shot, I'm going to be the best ever or whatever. And then devastating knee injuries, and he has to slowly work his way back into being a starting level point guard. you look at, you know, a lot of NFL players that I'm going to be the best ever at this. That's a huge statement, man. Like, why don't you just worry about your team being good? And yeah, that's a great point.
You see them, all the young guys. I hear it all the time. Somebody's going to come out and say, I want to be the best. My goal is to be the best ever. My goal is to be like Michael Jordan. My goal is to be like Joe Montana. It's like, shut up. Just play the game. Really, you're robbing yourself of a good time.
Yeah.
Because that's such a lofty goal that why don't you just try to be the best player today? As cliche as it sounds, you'll have more fun that way. It'll be enjoyable, and you'll just see it start to stack up. You don't have to put that undue pressure on yourself for no reason. It really does not help you at all. It only hurts you. That's the only thing you can do. Yeah. You're not being brave by saying that to me. I'm not impressed.
I actually agree with that, man. So, career does this, man. Obviously, we're gonna get out here soon. What was the greatest moment of your career? I mean, one of those things you look back on, that was special to me.
Winning a playoff game.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have that much team success throughout my career. I did in Atlanta. That's when things kind of took off for me from a career, from a team standpoint.
Yeah.
And so my fourth year, we made the playoffs. And I had lost every playoff game I've ever played in up to year 16. And we were playing against the Seattle Seahawks, Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman, all those young boys. And this is right at the beginning of their dynasty.
Yeah.
And they came in, and we were up 20 to nothing or something like that at halftime.
Yeah.
And then, boom, the second half came on. Russell started showing up. The defense started shutting us down. And they took the lead with 31 seconds left in the game, and we have no timeouts.
Yeah.
And so we get the ball. We got two plays. That's all it is.
Yeah.
You know, when they kick it off, we get the ball on the 20-yard line.
Yeah.
And we got to go and kick a field goal. And so they throw the ball to my man, Harry Douglas. He gets out of bounds. Actually, I think we had one timeout. And then they threw me the ball down the middle for like a 23-yard game, whatever, something big gain. And then we kicked the field goal and win. And I remember after that game, because during that time, I remember thinking to myself, I guess it wasn't meant to be for me because I was going to retire. And I was dead serious, like I'm retiring. And you start having that feeling of like, whoa, it was me. Like, I guess it's just not meant to be for me.
Yeah.
And when he made the field goal, it was the only time I've ever cried after a game.
Yeah.
Tears of joy.
Yeah.
After I've cried after losses, but I never cried tears of joy.
Yeah.
Because I never had any reason to. So it was one of those that was the best moment I've ever had on a football field. Just a great feeling.
It's a long time, man. A lot of work went into that. And then now, obviously, you're doing, you're doing amazing with on the TV stuff and doing that. What more do you want? I mean, do you enjoy doing TV? Do you enjoy doing entertainment, or you're going to look towards something else? Or what?
No, I'm enjoying this. I do the podcasting too.
Yep.
I have a podcast called Wide Open where I talk about this. I want to talk about leveling up, being the best version of yourself. I'm obsessed. That's what's weighing me, who I am.
Yeah.
So I like bringing on people, hearing their stories. Like you're like, I'm sitting here with you.
Yeah.
I want to hear the story on what made you so great. And then listeners can take that and maybe, you know, not avoid the same mistakes.
Yeah.
But I love doing the football. The Fox is great. It's so much fun working out, you know, with Terry Bradshaw, Howie Long, Michael Strahan, Michael Vick. The list goes on and on. Guys that I get to show up and just talk shop with. And then whatever other entertainment. I like performing.
Yeah.
I like the aspect of you remember I talked about like I love football. What I really loved is catching footballs and running routes. I think I love what I do now, but I love being able to be in the moment.
Correct.
That's the thing that television gives you or podcasting gives. Like, you have to be present in the moment. Like when we played.
Yeah.
The best, when you're thinking about the outcome or you're thinking about what happened, you are not at your best.
No.
And it's a hard place to get to. They call that the zone, or you're in that flow state.
Yeah.
I love trying to chase that. And I find that being in front of the camera gives me that opportunity to be in complete flow, and I love it. So whatever can take me that direction, I'm into it.
Yeah, I think that's even, everyone's like, do you miss it? The thing that I miss most is just having a built-in group of friends. Like when you played, like you said, you might not like all those guys, but if you leave in practice or you're on the road or you're sitting at home and you wanna just go grab a beer with somebody that's going through the same, something similar of you, the team's playing good or bad, they're in a similar space, and you can just, hey, let's go grab a beer, and you have that built-in friend for a while. When you go into the workplace, and I'm working with, you know, little John Smith that never gone through anything, it's hard for me to go grab him and say, let's go hang out for a second, because we just got nothing to talk about. Like, we're just in a different place. That's what I miss. And I think that what you're talking about, being in the entertainment space, working with those guys, I think it does give you that like-minded guys that you're able to talk about a sport that you truly love. That's big time. That's cool. Yeah,
find your tribe. That's what I always tell young guys when they retire.
Yeah. Look, brother, I appreciate it, man.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Yeah, we'll talk and we'll hang out soon.
That was fun.
We will. Thank you. Tony, man, I want to thank you for coming on, telling your story on Rookie Year. You can find Tony on IG and Twitter at TonyGonzalez88. Make sure you listen and subscribe to Tony's podcast, Wide Open with Tony Gonzalez. I'm your host, Jared Jeffries. You can follow me on IG and Twitter at ModernFishingTV. Thank you for listening. Thank you to DCP Entertainment. Listen and subscribe to Rookie Year on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your shows. For more information, go to DCPOfficial.com.
Next time on Rookie Year, Gabrielle Reese.
There were literally days where I felt like I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Like I couldn't play. Like even at practice, like you were like, yeah, I don't know if I can do this. Yeah. Like I'm not, I don't know if I'm capable or I have the talent to do it. Like you question yourself. And then every once in a while, there are times that you're playing and you are in that flow.
Yeah.
And everything is connected and the effortlessness that is. So I think in those moments were the ones where I'm like, I'm at the place that I should be. And quite frankly, even when it sucked, practices mm-hmm. sucked, or I was going through periods of time where tournaments where you're not performing well, I still knew I was in the right place for me.